And welcome back to the locker room. We've got a fantastic interview now with Graeme Yallop, who's a local fella, of course, well known down here on the peninsula, and one of the cricket royalty, we believe, because he's got that little title of Australian cricket captain, which will never be taken away from him. And I'm sure you enjoy that, Graeme. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, it certainly stays with you for the rest of your life, that's for sure.
Just looking at early on in your cricket, from what I can find here, you actually started off with Richmond, the old Dowling Shield back in the late 60s.
You've got a good better memory than me.
and the Australian, there was an Australian schoolboys tour that went on at Sri Lanka, and you were selected in that and did very well. So what are your memories of those early days as a junior cricketer?
It was really very competitive back then. And I suppose when I first started junior cricket, we didn't have, your under-10s, under-11s, under-12s. You really started in the under-14s. And so I didn't start playing cricket till I was really 13, 14. So I was a little bit of a late starter, but like everyone else, there was no competitions back then. Much better now, when I think obviously there's more players playing too, so that's all good. But going back then, it was very competitive. I felt that when I was growing up that I wasn't the best player around, but I felt that I loved the game and I really wanted to be successful as I possibly could. So I just went through the motions of training very, very hard junior day. And I suppose when I first started, I was an opening bowler. And then I thought, this would be hard. I thought, I wouldn't mind trying the art of batting. So I put a couple of really big pre-seasons in the batting side of it. And hence I improved and gradually improved to make it into the Richmond first.
Yeah, and so I think your debut was the 1970 season. Who were your early coaches then?
Jack Rose was one. Collingwood, former Collingwood great. I think he was my first ever coach, apart from my school coach, who was Frank Tyson.
Not a bad one.
Frank was an absolute marvellous coach, and and under his guidance, the actual school won a couple of premierships. Went to Kerry Grammar, and he was one of the teachers there. And he trained us up very well. And we had some pretty good players, by the way. But still, he was a terrific coach. So unfortunately, he's no longer with us. But memories are very fond of Frank.
Yeah, I can remember playing against Frank when he was in his 50s, and they did some games down this way with an off. Forgotten the name of the organisation it was, but he got a lot of people from the media and ex cricketers together, and often would play charity games and the like. And I was fortunate enough to play. And in those days, he just had a magnificent bowling action, even in his mid 50s.
But he probably wasn't called Typhoon Tyson anymore. It's probably more like Strong Wind Tyson. So Graeme, you replaced Rick McCosker in the Australian side in the fourth test of the 75 series against the West Indies. Doesn't seem like you were exactly welcomed into the side though, particularly by Ian Chappell. Did averaging 43 in the three tests you played change his attitude towards you?
No, there was a bit of a click in there. And only because I felt that they'd been playing together for such a long time that someone strange, didn't matter whether it was me or someone else, and a couple of the others who came in together with me and a little bit later also felt the same problem. But overall, I mean, they eventually accepted us into the side, and we went on from there. But the side did change from that 75-76 season, obviously, when this attacker came along.
So what must just give us an idea of what it was like facing the West Indies attack in the mid-70s, because it was quite an awesome attack.
Yeah, that was pretty daunting, is probably an understatement. when you're facing four of these quick bowlers who bowl in excess of 150 km, have pretty quick reflexes. I just remember it was the first test I played against the West Indies in Sydney, where Michael Holding was playing his debut game. Mm. I thought, oh, young bloke, you know, might be a little bit swift. You know, I'll just have to watch myself there. So I was batting at number three, and I was in there, and he came on for his first over, and I thought, my goodness, I don't think I saw it. I really didn't see the ball come out of his hand, and luckily it hit the keeper's glove before I realised that, hey, hang on, this guy's a bit sharp. So I felt from then on that if I was going to try and hook this guy, and a few of the other players tried to, including Ian Chappell, he couldn't get that on ball. He was that fast.
Mm.
So obviously he went on to have a great career.
And of course, Graham, we're talking pre-helmet days, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah.
We are. No, that was interesting because you felt that if you bowled it short, you were just going to get out of the way. You didn't have the reflexes. We didn't have the training to face those guys. So super quick, and there were four of them.
And of course, it was rather unfortunate for you that you weren't wearing helmets during that second West Indian tour, or the first West Indian tour that you went on, because you ended up on the wrong end of a Colin Croft bouncer, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was on 120, would you believe?
Hmm.
I thought, I'm invincible, as you think, when you're 120. No one can get me out.
Yeah.
And I played a hook shot for the boundary, the square leg, off Colin Croft. And I thought, this bloke meant to be pretty quick, but if I could hook him, he's not that quick. Anyway, the next ball is about 4 or 5 metres quicker. And I just hardly got the bat up and whacked me straight in the jaw.
Gee.
That put my career on hold for 4 or 5 weeks.
I can imagine.
And then you're sort of in and out of the team a little bit and had the a recall and related to, I guess, the World Series cricket as well. I mean, what are your memories of that time? Because it seemed to be pretty secret, a lot of secrets going on from when we talked to Gary Cozier a few weeks ago.
Didn't he release anything to you?
No, he told us, but he said that there were, at the time there wasn't much being said, and
absolutely.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, absolutely it was, particularly in the early stages. No one knew what was going on until it actually came out. Very turbulent time, because the players that you were playing with at the time broke away into the Packer circus, and then all of a sudden you didn't speak to them for maybe 1 to 2 years. We're going, this is crazy stuff. Anyway, when you were teammates 1 minute and then almost enemies the next, now that was absolutely ridiculous and crazy. And we felt that hopefully time will heal some wounds and the bodies would get back together. And luckily, it did after 3 years.
So that tour of the West Indies that we just touched on a few moments ago, when you had that run-in with Colin Croft, that was under Bobby Simpson, wasn't it?
It was.
So yeah. how did you rate him as a player and a captain?
At 41, when he came back to assist us, I thought that was an incredible effort. Come back at 41 to face these guys, who again were at their peak, and it was very courageous that he would do that, and he performed admirably without being brilliant, but I think someone had to do that at that stage, because we were a very young side, and we'd only played a handful of test matches when the whole thing erupted. So for him to come in to lead us, I thought it was a pretty good idea.
And just moving pretty much to the next season, I guess, when the cricket board decided, well, Bobby's about 44 by this stage, and he probably can't be guaranteed the captaincy, and they're looking for another captain.
Yep.
A lot of the talk I seem to recall was John Inverarity's name kept on being mentioned because he'd had a lot of experience, and then in the end you were appointed. Did you have some inkling of all this was going on? How did you find out you were appointed as captain?
Yeah, I had no idea, and I was surprised as anyone when they announced it. And in fact, I was shocked because I didn't think I had the experience, and I'd only played 8 test matches at the time. Mm. I thought, oh, gee, you know, I'm only 24, 25, and you know, too young, way too young. But when I looked at the team, I was the most experienced player in the side. So again, I thought there might have been a more experienced player that would come in and lead the side, but history tells us that wasn't the case.
So if you had your time over again, Graham, and they offered that to you as a 25-year-old, do you reckon you would have said, no, look, I think I'll concentrate on my batting? I guess what I'm trying to get around to saying is, do you think it was a positive or a negative to your playing career being,
well,
you know, put into that role so early?
If anyone offered you the captaincy of Australia, do you really want to knock it back?
Yeah, well, that's a point.
Yeah, good point.
But you know, obviously you take it and go, yeah, well, I'm shocked and surprised, but yeah, I'm happy to take on the challenge.
Did it affect your career in any way, though, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Mm. I didn't hamper my performances, my batting. I felt that I was pretty strong in that regard. And, you know, I just felt that we were so inexperienced against some of the, you know, the sides that we were playing. We just didn't have the depth. If anyone didn't perform, we really didn't have anyone to come in to take over.
Mm.
So we were very, very short of talent in those days, because don't forget, 3/4 of the side, the Australian side, went to the Packers.
Mm.
Now, I'm pretty sure, Graham, I read that test number 6, in that one, you got 121 out of 198.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that you felt that was one of your best innings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I felt that, boy, they were getting a few wickets early, and I just had to stick around and do the best I could. And as it turned out, yeah, we made the 121 out of 190, so... but I felt it was our only chance of survival if someone stuck around at the other end and put on a reasonable score. And obviously, in the end, it wasn't enough, because the English side was far more experienced and had been together for a number of years. So that was their strongest side for quite a few years.
So big is not always better, Graham, because that 121, I mean, you scored 800s for Australia and chalked up some pretty big hundreds, including that 268 against Pakistan in 83-84, but you reckon that 121 trumps that one?
I think so, from a performance point of view. Yeah, everything sort of hit the middle of the bat, and it was just one of those days where, you know, most cricketers realise if you have one of those days, you want to stick around and make it count. Because you have a lot of other days that you don't make any.
Mm.
So I wanted to make sure that the bowlers paid for some of my low scores.
Mm.
So you've, after that one, you've been fortunate in some ways, because you had tours of Pakistan, and not many people can say they do that nowadays, and, of course, England. So do you feel that you have fond memories of the tours that you went on?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all tours were fantastic. I went on 12 tours, so I really enjoyed the life on tour, although, you know, these days, of course, the tour is a little bit shorter. But when we toured England back then, we were there for 5.5 months, so that was the norm. We didn't go by boat, of course, back in the day, but we were there for 5.5 months, and that puts a lot of pressure on family life. And generally, as a rule, the Australian Cricket Board didn't really take too kindly for your family to be along on the tour, so we were sort of there by ourselves, and but we made the most of it and did as best we possibly could against a very strong England side.
And Graham, one of those tours, or I guess you're including it in the 12, was the Rebel tour to South Africa, only a few seasons after you'd made that 268 in 83-84. Did that effectively end your test career, and if so, did you realise when you were signing on that it probably would?
No, not really. No, we didn't think it would end, but in Victoria they felt that we could never play play again. And apparently, what I'm still hearing is that I'm still banned.
Yeah, I'd read that somewhere too.
So I haven't approached them to say, "Oh, can you take off the ban? I'm still available."
And round about that time too, you're having some. I'm pretty sure you had a knee operation. It was probably just before the South African tour. But you did have a bit of injury over the years, didn't you, in the cricket?
Yeah, the first injury I had was when I hit the MCG fence with my knee. That put me back 12 months at least, and then at the end of that 12 months, I did have another operation. So, yeah, that was purely from injury there that I sustained. So. And that's really the only problems I've had over the years have been knee injuries. In fact, I've still got it. I've still got dicey knees.
And of course, it doesn't happen anymore. They've roped them all off now, so you don't have people. You don't have people crashing into fences anymore.
Wouldn't you love to be playing now?
Yeah.
I mean, the boundaries are close. You're not going to injure yourself when you hit the ropes. There's so many different forms of the game now. There's so much more money involved. I mean, heck. When I first started playing for Victoria, we were paid $25 a game. And we thought we were very rich.
And, of course, things have changed dramatically, as you say. I mean, like, players used to retire in their 20s, didn't they, Graeme? Like, I'm thinking of Bob Cowper, an old captain of mine at Hawthorn East Melbourne, who was a stockbroker, and retired at 27, at 28, because he couldn't afford to play any longer.
No, that's right.
But, Graeme, I think it's fair to say you were recognised as a great player of spin bowling, so are well qualified to tell us who was the best spinner that you played with or against.
I think you can't go past a guy from Pakistan called Abdul Qadir. I thought he was one of the best players, best bowlers that I ever faced. A couple of the Indian spinners, Prasanna, Baby, Chandrasekhar, all these guys that come to mind were all very, very good players. More so in their own country where they got a little bit more spin. In Australia, of course, we don't get as much spin and we have a little bit more bounce, so it's a little bit easier to play these guys. But boy, they certainly control the way they spun the ball, control the way they, more like a Shane Warne, he was able to control the ball, and that's why he had so much success, because of his total control. And these guys were just were brilliant craft.
Now, of course, the locals listening in here will recall you did have some time playing on the Mornington Peninsula with the Pines Cricket Club.
Absolutely.
And
loved every moment of it.
I'm sure you would, because there's some incredible characters you must have come across. Just wondering some of the players you were with or against. I think we're talking early 90s, aren't we?
Yeah, I felt that it was a very strong competition.
Yep.
And really, when I was coaching at Premier level, Premier Cricket level, we were always asked of players who were down on the peninsula. The majority of them, for unknown reasons, just they didn't want to come up to Melbourne. Maybe they felt it was too far, but I'm not over sure. But these days, they have an opportunity to play with Frankston and Dandenong, so they've got some real opportunities down there now. But back in the day, I mean, we had some really great characters. Stephen Jackson from the Pines. I think he's still playing with his son.
His boys are there and playing in a lot of the squads. And Stella's a legend down here, of course.
Yeah, absolute character game. And I felt that he was one player who could have played first-class cricket. He was that good. And I think he was pretty well entrenched with family and friends at the Pines down on the peninsula. So again, he's one of the better players that I saw, but also came against some pretty good players around the track.
So fond memories of your years at Pines, as well as a bit of success.
Absolutely, yeah, they're going from strength to strength, so that's really encouraging. And they've had some success recently, so good on them. I hope they continue. And also, they've got a terrific ground now that's been done. So the boys are going well. Hopefully, they continue.
So, Graeme, you're not playing anymore, probably because you've been banned. But
not at first class.
But you're heavily involved in the coaching side of things, I believe.
We are, yes, we are.
So yep. Tell us a bit about that.
I've got a cricket centre in Dandenong South there. We've got a couple of lanes with bowling machines, and we've got five lanes, sort of a two-storey building, five lanes upstairs with a full run-up. So, yeah, and we do our coaching 12 months a year. We run the Victorian Cricket School, and hopefully we get some guys that we, when we train them up, we then send them on to Premier Cricket Club. Hopefully they can... We really give them a good grounding and let them understand what it takes to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Some of the young kids you might have been coaching the last couple of years, you got any names that you could mention for our listeners?
Oh, originally we coached Pattinson,
yep.
From batting,
yep.
The batting side of it, when he was obviously a little bit younger.
Mm.
We've had some players that are playing in Premier 1 and 2, and we really do absolutely want to make sure that they understand what it takes to get to the first class level. So I think that's really important to educate the kids these days, because really they don't get a heck of a lot of coaching in club level now, particularly the younger ones, where we just don't have enough coaches, which is sad.
Yeah, and because you're a level 3 accreditation yourself, I believe.
Yeah. So that also helps. Really, to be a good coach, I think you should have that experience as well behind you, so then you can really give the player, your experiences from the past that helped you make it to the top. And that certainly has helped some of the players that I send on.
Which is fantastic, and we'd encourage any of the clubs listening, if they want to get up there and use some of those facilities and some of your expertise, to make contact. I'll put the phone number out at the end of the interview, Graeme.
Great, thank you.
But just one more question. In my reading, it was suggested in 1978 you were the first player to wear a full helmet in a test match.
That's right.
Right, so which would have been different to that.
From the hit of Mr. Croft.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Following that, yeah, okay.
Well, you set a trend there, because you wouldn't go out and bat without one these days, would you?
No way, yeah. No way, and neither did anyone,
yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
How many lives have been saved by people getting hit in the helmet and survived the knock? Mm. So I sort of set a trend there, didn't I?
Mm, you did.
Very much. Graeme, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and we wish you all the best, and hope that the academy goes well there.
Great, I appreciate your help. Thank you.